Thank you, everybody. Happy President's Day. I just want to remind everybody what the goal here is today is to hear from the youth, Education Committees both believe that our youth voice is as important as anybody's voice. And so we love setting aside one day this every session to hear from the people that that are directly impacted the largest by what we do here, and it's our youth. And so for those of you that are missing school today, I want to thank you for not letting school get in the way of your education and taking time out of your busy life to come down here. And when your teachers are upset with why you missed school today, I'll write you a pass or whatever you need to get out to miss class today. Next to the chamber, if you do decide to take time while you're here today to visit the Capitol, outside our Senate chamber doors is engraved in stone are the words next to freedom and justice is popular education, neither of which freedom or justice can happen without being educated. So I want to thank you all for your willingness to engage in this process. I want to thank you all, parents as well, for raising the type of child who wants to participate in this wonderful thing called democracy. We can't do this without everybody's voices being heard. And so your willingness to engage with us today, we greatly appreciate it. Civic engagement's the cornerstone of democracy. And so again, thank you all. We're thinking 2 to 3 minutes per speaker. But and I also want to thank the members of the committee for getting people from your district to come testify. I know we didn't have as much of a notice as we would have liked, but it does seem like we've got a nice turnout. So thank you all for the effort you played in getting some members of your community to come speak today. So we've got 20 speakers. Enough of me. But if members want to ask any questions, we probably would have time for a quick question if you have a burning desire to ask one of the testifiers a question. But with that said, be patient with us, with our testifiers that are online as we get this right. And looks like we might get it right this week. So thank you for everybody behind the scenes that make that happen. Aaron Ress from Rochester, you're up first.
Hi, can everyone hear me?
Yep.
Perfect, I'll begin in just a second if my cat gets out of the way. Hello, Mr. Chairman, committee members. I am Aaron Ress, a senior at John Marshall High School in Rochester Public Schools, which is the 7th largest school district in the state. Living in Rochester, you know that there's a sort of privilege because of the Mayo Clinic and that Rochester is disproportionately wealthy and privileged compared to many parts of the state due to our large medical professional population. So with all this wealth, particularly property wealth, you would assume under the current funding model for schools, we would have an exceptionally well-funded district. However, instead you see a district with some of the lowest school district property taxes in the state that citizens refuse to raise through referendum, and a 2-year budget shortfall of over $30 million. And being so desperate, we had to rely on a $10 million bailout from the Mayo Clinic so we wouldn't have to shut down already overcrowded elementary schools. Because of this, you see a district where you can see very clear wealth and racial borders between the high schools. With my own high school, John Marshall, being the oldest, most underfunded, and most racially diverse, while Century High School is the newest, best funded, and least racially diverse of our high schools. You see a district with exceptionally and exponentially increasing absence rates due to either feeling bored in classes due to not feeling challenged, or facing situations at home outside of their own control. I know personally, I don't feel challenged in many of my classes, even though I take nearly every AP offered. And it makes me feel like much of the time that I'm even wasting my time being there in class. And I know many of my peers feel the same way. You see a district with a guarantee to technology, and yet we're relying on outdated systems that the district can't replace now that we've run out of COVID money. And of course, you must remember that also students have to pay to replace anything if they break the technology accidentally. You also see extracurriculars such as mime, speech and debate struggle to get by. We constantly have to go to schools in the cities to be able to compete, where we have to take rundown school buses with little heat in the dead of winter for the 60 to 90 minute journey because we really can't afford it any other way. So I'm not here to say that my school district is not privileged, because without a doubt we are, and we are in a very healthy community to live in. And I'm very grateful for the education that has been provided for me. However, my district can serve as an example of why the state needs to get more involved in education, both financially and policy-wise, to end the inequities running rampant in our education system. Thank you.
Thank you, Aaron. Just a reminder to everybody, we have a 2-minute timer and then a 30-second timer. So when you hear that beep, that means what it means. So thank you. Next up, Bree Griffin from Henry High School. In person. Okay. Bree Griffin. Thanks. She's on her way, but you probably already heard that. Shamira Melton from Henry High School. Virtual. Jaden Leary, St. Louis Park, virtual. Thank you.
Yes. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of committee. Sorry that I'm not there in person with you today. I have COVID. But the chance to share my perspective and represent the voice of the youth on matters that deeply affect us is important, too important to pass up. So I'd like to thank you for that opportunity. One of the most commendable initiatives from the last legislative cycle that I wish to highlight is the investment in trades, specifically the establishment of a grant program enabling groups and schools to equip young people with the skills to construct housing, particularly for the economically disadvantaged. This initiative stands out for several reasons. First, it imparts valuable trade skills to the youth, setting a foundation for future employment and personal development. Secondly, it fosters a profound connection between young individuals and their communities by involving them in projects with tangible social impacts. The act of building homes for low-income families not only addresses critical housing needs, but also instills a sense of purpose and community and spirit among the youth. This investment is a sterling example on how legislative action can directly enhance the educational experience, making learning relevant, engaging, and directly applicable to real-world scenarios. Furthermore, I wish to underscore the importance of service-based learning and active learning methodologies. Traditional education models often emphasize rote memorization and theoretical knowledge, which, while important, may not adequately prepare students for the complexities of real-life challenges. Service-based learning and active learning, by contrast, immerse students in practical experiences, community engagement activities that enrich their understanding and retention of knowledge. These approaches cultivate critical thinking, adaptability, and a sense of civic responsibility. As the legislative cycle unfolds, I earnestly hope that these educational methods will be given due consideration, recognizing their potential to mold well-rounded, socially conscious young individuals. A pressing concern that I feel compelled to address pertains to post-secondary enrollment options, or the PSEO program, specifically the exclusion of PSEO students from getting in sideways eligibility for free lunch programs present a significant barrier. PSEO offers a unique, valuable pathway for high school students to engage in college-level coursework, providing academic challenges and opportunities for advanced learning. However, the financial burden of meal expenses can detract from this opportunity, particularly for students from low-income families. While I understand that the legislative cycle might not prioritize long-term expenses this cycle, I urge that this issue be kept on the agenda for future consideration. Ensuring that PSEO students have access to basic needs like nutritious meals is essential for equity and overall effectiveness of the program. And I lastly like to thank you again that you represent and you're giving youth a chance to speak. I stand before you, albeit virtually, As a representative of a dynamic, passionate youth cohort of nearly 70 students that met back in November at the Capitol from all over Minnesota. And the issues I raised today both reflect immediate and long-term societal structures that, if addressed, can significantly enhance the quality of education and life for young people as we move forward. Thank you.
Jadeen, are you gone? Okay, too late.
Sorry, I'm still here.
Okay, do you have any idea or examples you'd like us to see us think about or pass legislation with respect to more service learning opportunities? Do you have anything in mind or?
I think a really good example, and I forgot what state this occurred in, was in regard to environmental education, they brought in a indigenous group of activists into the district in some way, shape, or form, and they worked with district members to create a curriculum that helped elementary school kids get outside, more specifically to get involved in the environment. I believe planting gardens, seeds, and that kind of stuff were examples of really getting their hands in the dirt and doing active learning and service-based learning within their community.
Okay, thank you.
Sydney McGrath, Roosevelt High School.
Those of you that are in, do they have to identify? Make sure you say who you are and where you go to school.
Perfect. All right, wonderful. Great. Hello, and thank you all for inviting me to speak to you. My name is Sydney McGrath, and I am a senior at Roosevelt High School in Minneapolis. I believe that the best decision my parents made was placing me in a Minneapolis public high school. The opportunities, the education, and the people I have met have taught me so much about myself and the impact I want to leave on the world. Like all high school students, I have my fair share of funny and memorable stories. I don't know if you know, but it's hard to delegate 20 high schoolers to transport 5 pallets worth of mulch through a high school into a courtyard, especially when the fire department shows up and tells you to evacuate due to an oil leak. But let me back up. In 2022, I ran for vice president of NHS. My goal then and now as president is to motivate our members to make an impact in our community. We've done just that. Every year we host multiple blood drives and fall food drives, coordinate alumni events, and have begun renovating our school's courtyards to make them beautiful spaces to grow native plants and display student artwork. Over the fall, we hauled over 250-pound bags into our courtyards full of mulch. While we did have to reschedule due to that oil leak, we are all set to start planting come spring and have quite the story to tell. My education in a Minnesota school has also inspired me to serve my community and pursue my passions. The Spanish Immersion Program has taught me how to be a global-minded citizen. And I'll interject here that the Spanish Immersion Program has been the most important part of my education. Thank you for making it a priority to continue throughout Minneapolis. By combining my passion for women's health, preventative medicine, nutrition, and bilingual skills, my goal is to now serve Latina communities through health and policy. Participating in 3 National History Day competitions throughout high school has prepared me to complete research at the university level. The PSCO program allowed me to become EMT certified, which introduced me to a fast-paced medical environment. The point I'm trying to make is that not all students get these opportunities. In Minnesota, education is valued and it shows. Youth is our most important investment. However, being involved in the administration of our school has shed light on many things that could be improved. The first is the lack of funding. Public school students deserve the same opportunities as their private school peers. With more funding, we can create more shadowing and professional opportunities, cultural exchange, and provide enrichment opportunities outside of the classroom. Furthermore, our teachers are some of the most influential people in our lives outside of our families. I've noticed how worn out they are. We need to support our teachers financially and by giving them time to create and teach their lessons. However, listening to youth today is a great first step. In March, I'll be traveling to DC to participate in the United States Senate Youth Program, or USSYP. In this program, 2 students per state are selected to attend a week-long program in which we'll hear majority policy addresses by senators, cabinet members, officials from the Department of State and Defense, and directors of other federal agencies, as well as participate in meetings with the President and Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court. Following the program, we'll also receive a $10,000 college scholarship. All these leadership and personal growth opportunities have inspired me to participate in the USSYP because I want to use my leadership skills in a larger capacity to impact greater numbers of people. USSYP will allow me to combine my passion for women's health, minority access to healthcare, and community well-being with politics to create change. Through professional networking opportunities and workshops, USSYP will teach me governmental processes that will not only set me up for success, but will teach me how to make the biggest impact in my community. I'm excited to announce that while I have not yet fully committed, I'll be attending Yale next year, where I'll be studying sustainable food and agriculture and public health. I will forever be grateful for the breadth of knowledge and experience I have gained throughout my K-12 education. Minnesota is a place where students are listened to, teachers go above and beyond, and where students are supported inside and outside the classroom. Thank you, and keep up the great work.
Thank you. Deepti Pillai. And congratulations to both of you for recognition of being picked to be our two representatives from Minnesota to go to Washington, D.C. for that wonderful program.
We're very excited. So, hello, my name is Deepti Pillai, and I'm from Eden Prairie, Minnesota. I'm currently a senior at Minnetonka High School, serving as the student body president, elected on behalf of about 3,800 students. This is the position that made me eligible to receive the U.S. Senate Youth Program Scholarship and attend Washington Week. At Minnetonka High School, I've spent 4 years in student government. Before being elected president, I was elected by my grade each year to serve as a grade-level representative. These positions have instilled in me the importance of campaigning, advocating, planning, delegation, and coordination. Minnetonka student government has taught me the benefits of being determined and dedicated, as well as empathetic and connected to those around me. Beyond this, two other experiences I hold dear to me that have shaped who I am and what I want to do in the future include the Minnetonka Coalition for Equitable Education and working on the Phillips for Congress campaign. The Minnetonka Coalition for Equitable Education is an organization I helped create the summer before my freshman year, through which I have advocated for improved educational policies in my district. In doing so, I have developed a deep understanding of the impacts of civil discourse and speaking up when it is difficult. The Phillips for Congress campaign is where I got the great opportunity to meet with Senator Swadzinski several times amongst a host of other fantastic elected leaders. This is the avenue through which I began door knocking, phone banking, and text banking, among other grassroots forms of organizing. This internship is one I've participated in for years and has developed my interest and understanding of policy and regard for constructive conversation and compromise. From a young age, I have been immersed with politics, elections, and government structures due to their effect on my life and exposure to how these decisions can completely uproot or immeasurably improve people's lives. Student government, MCEE, and the Phillips for Congress internship, alongside many other activities and experiences, have supported and built upon my appreciation for politics and government, as well as my sincere desire to ameliorate aspects of our government systems. This has spurred my interest in serving as an elected official in the future, or at least working in politics and government, and studying these fields in college. As Sydney has previously said, in 2 weeks we will fly out to our nation's capital to participate in the 62nd U.S. Senate Youth Program Washington Week, where we are set to meet with Senator Klobuchar and Smith, to participate in a meeting with President Biden and a justice of our U.S. Supreme Court, to hear policy addresses from senators, cabinet members, officials from the Department of State and Defense, and directors of other federal agencies. These are only a handful of the invaluable experiences offered through USSYP. This program provides the unique opportunity for me to immerse myself in the world of politics firsthand, allowing me to envision myself in a position where I serve a constituency while still championing the goals and priorities most important to me. I currently strive to do so on a smaller scale, and the USSYP is a catalyst for understanding what a future could look like doing so on a larger scale. Thank you so much for serving our state and for your time today.
Senator Abler, would you like to share that comment louder?
Ms. Chair, she's going to be president someday. Thank you.
Thank you.
Enjoy that opportunity in D.C. again, you two. That's an amazing program. I know it well. So quite a resume you must have. Lila from Haney from Roseville High School.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Lila Heine, and I'm currently a senior at Roseville Area High School. I spoke last year in favor of the school mental health personnel bill, noting my personal story and the needs of my fellow students. As teenagers, we make some of the deepest emotional connections with the people around us. Through these crucial years, we have to face some of our hardest mental trials. I've seen people with the kindest souls face mental illness that they were too scared to get help with. In fact, I've had friends too overwhelmed to think about the future at all. But after seeking support for myself, I now know that nothing can ever compare to professional help. Helping students with their mental health isn't the job of a teenager or even a teacher. This is the job of a trained professional who can give us what we truly need. Not only do our counselors help our mental health, but they are also perfect resources for our academic questions and success. Figuring out who I am and what I want to do while applying for colleges and scholarships is extremely stressful and can get easily confusing. My counselor has been an amazing help to me through this crucial period in my life, but others are not as lucky as me, and some have to wait days, even weeks, to meet with their counselors. School counselors who are available to all are absolutely essential for the mental well-being and educational careers of our students. We need to have more access to counselors, and the current ratios are unacceptable and don't set us up for success. Something that I know my school and I take pride in is our staff. We have an amazing team of psychologists, counselors, behavioral interventionists, and teachers. In fact, some are so great I have found myself being inspired to possibly become a school psychologist or counselor myself. But these professionals, including school counselors, are simply understaffed. And the cost of work in these positions is becoming simply too grand to appeal to our future workforce. It's important that we provide schools with a goal for reasonable ratios to add to the incredible movement created last year for student mental health funding. School can take a lot out of a person, and teenagers are more complicated now than ever before. To be successful in school, not only do we need great teachers and paraprofessionals, but the student support personnel that help us in so many ways. Please take into consideration students like me when making decisions, and please provide the needed ratios to allow our student support personnel to support the whole student. Thank you.
Maybe they won't be so understaffed when you become join them in the
yes,
profession.
Hopefully so. Hopefully
right.
So.
Do you have, and maybe this is for the speakers that are also going to be coming up to testify, I should have brought this up maybe earlier, but do you have any idea at all, and it's easy to say COVID, but you mentioned that a lot of your friends are feeling just stress, and we maybe don't recognize that because it wasn't as stressful to be a teenager perhaps when we were teenagers. And do you have any idea what has, because you're not the first student to share that idea with this body, and do you have any ideas on what we as a legislature could do to reduce the amount of stress our young people through legislation if possible?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that I'm really trying to get across right now is just the student to counselor ratios. We're currently, I believe, 47th in the country, maybe 48th, which is just kind of embarrassing for Minnesota in general. We pride ourselves on our education, and that's something that is really important to students, to have access to someone who they can talk to if they're just having a bad day or if they have questions about future college stuff. I know it's, as a senior, I know it's extremely confusing, and it does add a lot of stress to be thinking a lot about your future. So counselors are a really, really good resource for our students, and we need to find ways to fund them more, get more of them in our schools. A lot of elementary schools don't even have counselors right now. And also find a way to really get the future working class to want to become counselors, because we have a shortage of counselors in Minnesota in general to help our students. So that's kind of the main thing that I'm trying to get across.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Marit Mattson from Mankato East.
Hi, my name is Marit Mattson, and I'm a sophomore at Mankato East High School. I testified last spring's mental equity bills in multiple different chambers, and I've been working on the rollout of that bill most of this fall with my district. But one of the things I'd like to highlight today as an issue in schools, especially in my district, has been safety and student safety in the building. Especially at the beginning of the year, we had a lot of issues with emergency events and lockdowns without any clear protocol being communicated, and especially with the SRO bills and discussions in the beginning of the year. There were a lot of student concerns about their safety in the building, which I think is detrimental to learning. Students can't take the time to learn and grow in their academics when they're unsafe in schools.
Are you in a stairwell during, like, class? We're frozen, so okay. Mara, were you done with your testimony?
Sorry, I'm having connection issues with the building. I just got back in. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. We didn't know if you were finished with your testimony.
No, sorry. It disconnected. No, but that would be the thing I'd like to highlight. And then I'd also like to thank everyone who's here today and everyone for listening. I think the most important thing for students is to know that their legislators are hearing them and are there for them. And I think being able to be heard and have your opinions validated and shared and feel like you can make change through that is incredibly important.
Thank you. You mentioned SROs. What's the word on the street, so to speak, among the students at your school? Is it something they're just not on their radar, or is it something you guys talk about?
No, it is actually a discussion within our student body. In the beginning of our school year, the first week, we had two lockdowns, back-to-back days, and it was incredibly stressful, and we didn't have clear SRO protocols set up at the time. So throughout the school year, it has been a really important discussion, not only among students, but with parents as well. Just making sure that everyone feels safe coming to school, because there have been days that we don't, and there are days that a third of the class has been pulled out by their parents because they don't feel safe coming back. As far as issues highlighting, we had a fire set at our school in December, and then we had a large fight and some gun violence issues in the community.
Thank you, Marit. Okay, next up, Delaney Book and Julia Bars. Are they together? Is that why they're together on this list? Okay. Welcome, and make sure you sign in and identify yourself.
Hello, everyone. My name is Delaney Book, and I am a senior this year. Thank you all for the opportunity to speak today. The Department of Education's goal should be for the flourishing of each child's learning experience. So why wouldn't a parent or guardian's time, resources, and money be directed where they know their child would flourish rather than the government decide that for them? An important thing that should be fixed in the education system is enacting school choice policies. A longstanding American tradition is a parent or guardian making the best decisions to raise their children in our ever-changing, expanding world. These traditions should not only continue to occur, but be further supported by our government. Some may say some families do not get the choice either way because they don't have the same resources that other families do. But in fact, this policy would benefit those families because they would finally have the choice to attend the school they want. They wouldn't have to pay both taxes and tuition. They would choose where their money goes. And the competitive aspect that this would add to the Minnesota school system would help teachers and facilities in both public, private, and charter schools. For example, A school named Hope Academy in Minneapolis is serving a lot of families that would have to send their students to underperforming schools otherwise. This is an example of a school that would benefit from school choice and get to serve more underprivileged families. In 2022, the average public school graduation rate in Minnesota was 84%, and Hope Academy's graduation rate now is 97%. More specifically, the average student of color graduation rate was 79%, and Hope Academy's student body is 77% students of color. I personally experienced the benefit of choosing my school. After my freshman year of high school, after going to public school my entire life, I moved to Southwest Christian High School. The school, the curriculum, and most importantly, the teachers and the community have marked my life. Everyone learns differently. Why are we pushing everyone into the same educational model? One thing we have learned over the course of American history is that one size doesn't fit all. So let's together promote the flourishing of every child and enact school choice policies. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and Committee. My name is Julia Barse, and I'm a senior at Southwest Christian High School. I'm here today to tell you why removing mobile devices from the classroom has a positive impact on our learning environment. We live in an era where smartphones are everywhere, practically unavoidable. Yet, as we dive deeper into this digital age, it's becoming increasingly evident that these devices are not always conducive to the kind of learning that Minnesota schools aspire to achieve. We are told that providing students access to smartphones is synonymous with teaching them how to use these devices responsibly. However, our experiences contradict this assumption. Instead of enhancing our learning experiences, smartphones often serve as distractions, pulling our attention away from the valuable lessons being taught in the classroom. It's time for us to reevaluate the role of technology in education and to reimagine how classrooms operate in this digital age. By removing smartphones from our learning environments, we create an atmosphere where students can fully engage without the constant draw of social media and digital distractions. In my own school, we've witnessed the transformative power of reducing smartphone usage, not only in classrooms, but also in hallways and during lunchtime. Before switching to a smartphone-free environment, connections within the student body struggled, as many put all their attention towards their devices. When my school implemented Yonder Bags at the beginning of my sophomore year, the culture immediately shifted, which has fostered meaningful connections that were previously hindered by smartphone usage. This simple change has brought on a stronger sense of community and has allowed us to focus more deeply on our academic endeavors. I urge you to address the detrimental effects of smartphones in classrooms. Prioritize the well-being and academic success of students. Build the character of Minnesota students first and foremost, and implement a better phone policy to pave the way for a more enriching educational and relational experience. Thank you for your time.
Mr. Chair, I have a question for Julia, if that's okay.
Yeah.
Beautiful name, by the way. It just flows right off the tongue. Julia, I was wondering, you mentioned Honor Bags? Could you tell me a little bit more about how those work?
Yep, so we were given pouches at the beginning of the year. Each student gets one, and we hold on to them. We put our name on them at the beginning of every school day. We're responsible of keeping track of it, and the deans stand at the main doors. We put our phones in and lock them using a magnet. It's magnetically shut, and at the end of the day, the only way you can unlock your bag is using those specific Yonder magnets that are put out at the end of the day, so that way students can't just break open their phone. It's not done by Velcro, so that way they'll stay locked all day.
Senator Coleman, Senator Mayquate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Julia, I want to really thank you for what you shared, and I am 100% in agreement. I actually looked into how much it would cost to give every school district in Minnesota Yonder Bags. It's very expensive.
Yes.
But I also just, I want to share with the committee, because I think this is really important to your point. There was a study that just came out of the University of Columbia. Now, it's not been peer-reviewed, which is a very important step in research, but it found that students learn better on paper than they do on devices. So not just cell phones, but iPads as well. And so I think what you brought to this committee is very, very important. I want to thank you for that, because it's important that we hear that from students, because I think everyone thinks, oh, just young people want to be on devices all the time, and I don't think that's true. So I thank you so much for that.
Thank you.
And I don't even know what to say other than I retired about 8 years ago, right when cell phones were like every kid had one, and I put on my door a no cell phone sign in my classroom. And it was just one classroom in the building that did not allow cell phones. But I think that trend is continuing. And because we all see the detriment. And so do you know the punishment if you violate it? What happened to that young person if they got a cell phone out during passing time or in the, when a teacher steps out in the hallway for something?
So if a student does get by without their phone, obviously it's not easy to find every student if they don't lock their phone, but the deans are really diligent about making sure and checking, like, show me your yonder bag before you go through the doors. If you forget your yonder bag, there's a basket at the front desk where you put your phone in and you sign a paper with your name, and then you get your phone at the end of the day from the basket. Obviously, it's impossible to make sure every single student is putting their phone in their yonder bag, but the school has done a good job, I think, for the most part, making sure that students lock their phone. But if someone is caught with their phone, the dean will just take it for the day, and they'll get spoken to.
Are you calling this bag?
It's called a yonder bag, so Y-O-N-D-R.
Not Donner.
No, yonder.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Senator May Quaid, sorry if we've bombarded. Sorry for all the people that were up here and didn't get any
Mr.
questions.
Mr. Chair, I did tell them they probably wouldn't get questioned today. I'm so sorry.
But it's this is something that I think all of us on this committee would like to know more about, because it seems like for all, the study Senator May Quaid brought up, I mean, we know this is a concern. Our teachers are saying it's a concern. And so so sorry to not to dismiss the other testifiers, but this is of interest to us greatly. So thank you. Senator May Quaid.
Mr. Chair, I was just going to say yonder bag, if you've ever been to a stand-up comedy special or a concert where they're keeping it under wraps because they're going to release it maybe on Netflix or online later, they put your phone in a yonder bag. You keep it with you, but you can't take it out to record. And then when you leave, they'll unlock it for you.
What I love about this job, every day is a new learning experience. So you get it yonder. Is that the origins of the word? Wow, interesting.
I'm happy to answer any questions after we're
done. You want to write the bill?
Well, sure.
Senator Coleman may be in contact with you.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if she doesn't, I will. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
What's happening now? Are they there?
Joseph Lucy is the only one that we
couldn't
hear. We had to skip
some because the virtuals aren't working. Okay, so who is next? Joseph Lucy?
Hello? First of all, I wanted to thank the chair and the committee for the opportunity to speak here today. My name is Joe Lucy. I'm a senior at Lakeville South High School, and I wanted to use this opportunity to speak about the accessibility of civic and leadership programs to high school students. As a senior, I have participated in several of these programs, the most significant of which has been Boy State. Boy State is an American Legion educational program where hundreds of boys aged 16 to 17 dorm with each other to learn more about state leadership and civics over the course of a week during summer. Through this camp, I've learned many things. I learned to be a civically responsible citizen and how to communicate better with others about issues. I've also made many friendships that are sure to last a lifetime. This experience has helped me learn about how our state government works and how to speak meaningfully in front of others. Unfortunately, only one member is selected each year from our high school, and although many students would love to go, there's not enough funding to send everyone. Recently, I have also attended a leadership conference concerning captains of many different spring sports, but only 2 to 3 captains were selected for each sport. Boys State, along with these other leadership conferences and opportunities, have been fundamental in my growth in becoming a well-rounded, civically engaged, and mindful person. Encouraging students to become involved in their community can also help them later in life, as they will learn how to benefit their community and learn valuable social skills. This is why I believe that extracurricular leadership programs should become more widely available to students. These programs can do more for students than traditional public schooling and provide invaluable skills that will provide a better skill set to future generations of leaders. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak here today.
Thank you, Joseph. Thank you, Joseph. Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Joseph, for zooming in and sharing some of this with us. I didn't know what exactly you were going to talk about today, but you got me fired up talking about Boise State. Were you there this last summer?
Yes, this last summer I attended. It was a really cool experience. My dean chose me, and I walked in there blind, and it was a really fun time.
Mr. Chair, if I may, thanks for sharing that. I'm a little biased. I'm a fellow Boise Stater myself from way back in the day. I represented Lakeville at the time before there was Lakeville North and Lakeville South. And you might not remember this, but I actually came and visited you guys this summer and spoke on your last day. So
I do remember, yes.
Okay, well, thanks for not mentioning it and embarrassing me. Just kidding. I just want to say thank you so much for not only highlighting the fantastic work that that program does, but that our leadership programs all across the state do, and how important it is for our schools to be looking at those and making sure that we have many opportunities for students. For those that don't know, the program Boys State, and there's also Girls State, it's funded largely by the American Legion. I'm a member myself. I'm also a member of the VFW, and a lot of our local charities and nonprofits in our communities raise money to send students just like myself and Joseph to things like Boys State or Girls State. So they're very, very important. They're great partnerships, and I can't thank you enough for being here to highlight how valuable they are and being such a good example and representative of those programs. And I'll tell you right now, I'll make sure that both North and South each send more than one student moving forward. Thank you very much.
And you may be modest and not want to do this, Joseph, but I'm just wondering what attributes do you felt like your dean or counselor saw in you that they sought you out to be to represent your school?
So mainly, I think they look for someone who's looking to pursue these kinds of opportunities. That's mainly why you don't see a lot of kids going to these sort of programs or experiences. And also someone who's not afraid to public speak, you know, adventurous, because it is the week after school ends. So you're going straight from school to this Boise State program. And he told me, and immediately I was like, sure, let's do it. And I think that's kind of the thing that made him, you know, choose me.
Thank you. Thank you, Joseph. So I think we missed Vandana Ramathan. I know I butchered that, but I shouldn't by now. Thank you.
Well, hello, everybody. My name is Vandana Ramanathan, and I'm a junior from Eden Prairie High School. And I just want to thank everybody for inviting me to come in and speak about the educational institutions and some things that we decided to pursue regarding that. And I just want to preface by saying that I will be discussing mental health within education with brief mentions of suicidal ideation. So if you need to leave, please feel free to. Now, I am the co-founder of a national youth-led organization called the Youth Equity Project, where we focus on the narratives that schools choose to pursue regarding mental health. From the studies that we have conducted all over the nation and in Minnesota, I have noticed the vast inequality surrounding minority access to mental health more than ever before. Now, raising awareness about mental health in a widespread group of individuals with different cultures, perspectives, and lifestyles is incredibly difficult. However, that doesn't take away from the importance of addressing this issue. When it comes to academic success and standards, students face tremendous mental health issues and face stress as a result. Over half of students have some form of anxiety and/or depression during their high school experience, and we need to take action. Just in the last 2 years, my school has faced more suicides than ever before, and this is a direct result from the increased academic stress that students face. Now, as a South Asian living in an immigrant household, I have faced significant mental health difficulties, especially when it comes to pursuing a treatment provider. And I am not the only one. A lot of people can't access proper mental health treatment at home, whether it's because of finances, accessibility, or the stigma surrounding it. However, this is exactly where schools can come in to help. Whether it's adding mental health education and standards into the curriculum, offering co-located mental health service options, reducing the counselor-student ratio, offering mental health screenings, or proactively educating youth and teachers on detecting mental health issues in the people around them, we can provide them with ample ability to connect with their students and recognize stigmatize issues like suicidal ideation. It is important to acknowledge that schools are also not very equipped to deal with issues such as these because of the resources and funds that they are allocated. However, on top of addressing this issue, we need to address the underlying stigma of mental health at the same time that schools subconsciously promote through this. Unfortunately, in the status quo, mental health is very low on the list of priorities for educational institutions, but this can change, which is why I came in to speak today to talk about mental health, and because we have the ability to change the narrative for millions of students all over Minnesota. Now, it is important to realize that schools are much more than learning. It is a gateway into the world, a way for people to learn about the world around them, but more importantly, themselves. Now, just by allowing more mental health resources and treatment options for students, we can finally empower them to take the step to help themselves and not let mental health come in the way of their educational pursuits. Thank you.
Wait, it's tough. It's a tough subject. It's
for
a tough,
sure.
Yeah. When are we teaching kids to the signs to recognize within themselves or among their friends that maybe they're thinking about suicidal ideation? When are we is Eden Prairie teaching that? Do we know if we're teaching it in other schools? Is it part of the health curriculum? I don't know. I'm just asking. And what do you think we could do a better job of getting rid of the stigma that you alluded to? So I got two questions for you on that.
Yeah,
but thank
well, great
you.
Questions. Well, I can just say that when I took my just like the common health class, there was really a very brief mention of a few mental health issues, but really nothing about how to cope with it, how to see it within the people around us. And I think that's just one place where we can take that step to make sure that we can reduce some of these very preventable issues, especially when it comes to offering treatment and just awareness about mental health. And honestly, I don't know much about other schools, but I do know that when it comes to the health standards in education, it really is up to the school to decide what to pursue regarding mental health. And from what I have heard, there's really not a lot of schools that decide to pursue that, but obviously I can only talk about my own school, but from what I've heard, there's really not much of an emphasis placed upon mental health, which is really somewhere where we can change.
Senator Mann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question. In your lifespan as a student, do you think that the problems of mental health, do you see them in your own experience in your day-to-day getting worse? And maybe that's a question for everyone sitting out there. Nod or shake your head if you feel like it's getting worse.
Honestly, I think when it comes to things like academic pressures, that is definitely something that is only getting worse as the years go on. There is more and more of an emphasis on grades and GPA and being able to go up to standards where a lot of students can't feel like they can go, which results in a lot of pressure and a lot of pressure from the people around them, which I think has only gotten worse. Yeah.
Senator McQuaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for coming and sharing all of this.
Thank you.
This is really important to me, and I spent a lot of time reading about the decline of youth mental health, and there have been a few different things that have been identified. One that was really interesting to me, and if you don't know or don't have an opinion or don't have anything to say, that's okay, but one that came forward really recently from, I believe it was the Association of the Academy of American Pediatrics, is that the lack of public spaces for youth to gather together is contributing to their decline in mental health. I know when I was in high school, which wasn't that long ago, my parents would drop me off at the mall with my friends and say, like, go run around. We go to the movie theater. We were allowed to be in public together as children, as youth, and not be in trouble for that. And I don't feel like that's the same now. Can you talk a little bit about that? If that's true, do you feel like that's true?
Honestly, I can definitely see that being true. Like, I think that there's just still I think there's much more like a stricter emphasis on just like education, just like cutthroat, just like things like that. And I think it has gotten a little bit better in some ways than others, but I think you're completely right. I think that study does really align with my own experiences as well. So yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you, Vandana.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for making this opportunity available. My name is Zahara Umar. I'm a junior at Eden Prairie High School. And today I want to be talking about equity in religious holidays being given off. Eden Prairie High School has a diverse student body, which is the superpower of our school. With such a diverse student body, it's important that our school calendars reflect that. When holidays are given off for Christian students but not for others, it appears as if one group of students' education is being prioritized over the other. As a Muslim student who observes the holiday Eid, I know firsthand the stress and anxiety that comes with taking off school for my holiday. When I take off for Eid, I have to communicate with teachers weeks in advance to plan how I will make up the work I will miss over my holiday, often having to take time from holiday festivities to work on classwork. In addition to this, it will often take weeks for me and my Muslim peers to catch up on the work we miss due to constant new instruction being introduced and teachers not taking the time to reteach instruction. When my Christian peers take off for Christmas, there is no expectation for them to make up work during their holiday breaks, during their holiday celebrations, or to come back from their holiday to mountains of work. Surrounding school districts have worked to ensure their student calendars represent their student body's diversity, yet Eden Prairie Schools still refuses. Let's embrace the diversity of our community and provide our Muslim students with the days off they need. Thank you.
Senator Kunish.
Thank you so much for coming in and sharing all of that. I agree with you. I think it's very important that we acknowledge and we recognize the sacred days that each of us need to fulfill those spiritual and cultural needs. Have you spoken with your school district, with your school board, your superintendent, with that kind of a request?
I know there has been talk about it with the school board and things like that. And a lot of the times they'll say that that's not something that they can do, that they can't give that day off, that it would cause legal problems. So that's what I've heard about that. So people have spoken to the school board about it, but that's usually their response. Mm-hmm.
One follow-up. Yeah, go ahead, Sam.
And I know there are a number of sacred days in the Muslim community and in your religion. How many days a school year would you expect that you might want to request to have the school acknowledge that and give you the kind of separation that you're looking for?
Honestly, the only one that's coinciding with the school year right now is Eid, and it's a 3-day long holiday, but we would only really need the first day off. That's what most school districts are providing around Minnesota right now. So that would be it. It wouldn't be that much.
Okay, thank you so much.
Do you know if any school districts in the state give Eid off?
I'm pretty sure there are surrounding school districts that do. I don't know them off the top of my head, but I do know that there are some because I have friends who go to the schools and they get the day off.
Thank you. Such enthusiasm.
Good morning. Good afternoon, senators and committee members. So one thing I'd like to talk about is my freshman year, there was a lot of like violence and fights in our school, and we had a principal that was there for a couple years. But coming into my sophomore year, we had a new principal, and one thing that I noticed is we had a big influx of security personnel, and in specific, security personnel that are people of color, and my school is very diverse, and we have a lot of kids that come from different backgrounds, and from my sophomore year to now my junior year, the frequency of fights have significantly decreased, and I would like to highlight that to the security personnel because in the hallways, the kids have really made a connection with these people. and you see them joking around and just, you know, wanting to be around them. And I feel like that can go even deeper into the classroom. I feel like having the student, the teacher, staff represent the student body is really important, because walking into a classroom and maybe seeing somebody that looks like you is different, because you can make certain connections that you can't make with somebody that maybe doesn't look like you or doesn't have the same experiences as you. And so I feel like just having that representation in our classrooms is really important to the students and their learning.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Kenneth, for being here and sharing your perspective with us. Just a quick follow-up question for you. We talk about security personnel being in the school. Do you know, are those school resource police officers, or are they just like a security company that the school district is hired? It's okay if you don't know. Just curious.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. They're not like in uniform, but they're just they're around the hallways during our passing times and in the mornings, and they kind of just make sure all kids go to class on time. Like my freshman year, there was barely any, but we've had like a lot more during since my sophomore year. And they're the ones who like respond to like fights or something goes wrong. They're the ones that are always there.
Thank you.
Yeah. Senator Abler. Well, okay. Senator Abler, it's our time. Have you noticed a difference in the security? I mean, is that something most students feel safer because of the number of security people in the building?
Yeah, I would definitely say a lot of kids feel safe, more safe coming to school, just because of like the environment of the school is also more lively. I feel like during passing time, there's a lot of kids talking to these people, maybe like just about school or how things are going in general. I feel like it's kind of more like somebody that I feel like it's always important to have somebody in the school that you trust, you can talk to whenever you need something. And I feel like a lot of these people have become that for students, and I feel like it's been really beneficial to them and the environment of the school.
So it's, they're building relationships.
Yeah.
Senator Mann.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Hearing that it's important for school personnel to look like you, we've been hearing that a lot. Like, we hear that all the time. And we've been trying to work hard on making that happen. Have you noticed a difference in the number of teachers or school personnel that are becoming more diverse and looking more like the student body over the years?
Yeah, I definitely have. Once our new principal was hired, that was a big thing that I noticed in our school. Right now it's mainly just the security personnel, but I've talked to her and I know she's trying to, you know, make that something that she addresses for like the teachers or the staff, like more of the staff and not just like security personnel. Yeah.
Next up, Weeman. Thank you. So the other Bloomington school doesn't get the same reaction.
Sorry. Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Weeman Yakison, and I am a senior at Jefferson High School. I've lived in Minnesota since 2010, but I was born in Liberia, located in West Africa, and I moved here with my family at the age of 4. Now, I have been involved in a lot of things throughout my 4 years of high school. I also had the privilege of attending Girls State this summer, and it taught me a lot about what I want to do in life and made me conclude on my decision in majoring in political science. And I would say I go to an amazing school district that has taught me so much, and I've been there K through 12. And while my experiences may differ from other children who haven't had the same opportunities as me, I would say the Bloomington Public School has really impacted me as a whole with all of the opportunities that I have had. When I heard that I had the opportunity to speak to all of you guys, I was absolutely honored and ecstatic. Now,
I wanted to bring up a couple of issues, concerns, and comments and speak on behalf of the students at my school. So I spent the days leading up to this surveying and asking for feedback on not just my thoughts, but also what the student body thinks. Now we all know that when asking students, you know, questions like these, the topic of lunch always seems to come up, whether it's the portions are too little or there's not enough time. And now I know that Governor Tim Walz signed in favor of the Universal School Meals Law last spring, and I just want to express how beneficial I thought that was. As a kid, I grew up on the free and reduced lunch plan, and I never really knew what it was like not having money in my account or having to pay for lunch, but I know students who had to, and after speaking to some of them on Friday, the impact this made on them would not go unrecognized. I talked to senior Rudy McGee, who had stated last year that she avoided eating lunch a lot because she had the idea that she would have to pay, and she even avoided it on the days when she was extremely hungry. But this year, with that not hanging over her head, she's felt more open to going and visiting the lunchroom. Now, continuing on the topic of lunch, you know, high schoolers are very passionate about this one, but we are required to take certain things during lunch, which wouldn't be a problem because I understand that the school wants to ensure that we're getting all of our food groups. But the problem of this is that so much food continues to be wasted every day. And if you do not take one of these required items, you cannot get lunch at all. And the amount of oranges and pears and sandwiches that I've seen in the trash bins at lunch is absolutely crazy. And when surveying more students, a lot of them mentioned not having enough food options or halal options or options for people who are vegan or people who are vegetarian. My best friend, who is Indian and is vegetarian, every day her main option at lunch is a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. That is the only thing that she can eat most days. Sometimes she gets lucky with pasta or something else, but there isn't really much for her to eat. Although I'm not sure what can be done about this, I wanted to bring that up to your attention. And we all know the students, you know, have a lot to say about where they learn in, but last spring, I worked on the Bloomington Strategic Plan, which maps out the future for the next couple years of high school, or the school district in general. And now through that, I learned a lot about the educational system, but I also learned about the disparities that exist within it. And one thing that really stuck out to me was the transition from middle school to high school. Now, my middle school experience was a bit hard because of COVID, but I managed just fine, and I learned to get through it. But as I've continued to watch freshmen enter my school so unprepared and prone to failure, the issue has now become bigger. And now I understand a lot of them missed out on the opportunity to learn and grow in middle school because it was all done through a screen. So because of that mindset, once they got out of high school, they aren't really prepared because they missed out on those really pivotal years. And I talked to a sophomore named Serenity Mormont, and she stated that she felt like she came into high school unprepared, which is why she struggled to keep her grades up a lot. And overall, I would like to leave you guys with this. These 4 years are one of the most important years of our life. Having a system that always continues to help its students and better the environment they learn in is pivotal. Thank you.
If you could go back and tell your middle school teachers one thing, what would you, collectively, I know middle school teachers deserve a special place in heaven, in my opinion. But if you could go back in time and say, I wished we had known more about this when we entered high school, what would you want to tell the principal or the teachers in that at your middle school?
Personally, my middle school experience was, I wouldn't say it was the best, but I would say it was pretty decent enough. And I did love my teachers that, you know, were there for me. But one thing I wish, you know, they would have told me is to just kind of be in a headspace of always wanting to do your work. Because I feel like a lot of students are coming into high school with, because I remember when I was in middle school, I didn't get much homework at all. It wasn't something, and you know, if you had a C or if you had a D, it wasn't really that much of a big deal because, I mean, it's middle school. It doesn't really matter here. You just have to learn it when you get to high school. And I feel like a lot of students, you know, struggled with that, and I feel like if they had only emphasized that grades really do matter, you know, when you get to high school, I feel like it would help students a lot more.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, my name is Kate Reed, and I'm a senior at Rosemont High School. Thank you so much for having me today. I will preface my speaking today by saying that I was actually here last Wednesday, advocating for the Prove It First bill, asking businesses that would like to copper sulfide mine to prove that their mining will not have detrimental effects on the environment. I also participated in Lobby Day last year in support of the 100% clean energy bill. So with that, you may be able to tell that I'll be speaking on environmental topics and advocacy today. To get to know a bit more about me and my, I guess, credentials, I currently serve on my City of Rosemount's Environment and Sustainability Commission as the singular youth member. So through this opportunity, I've really gotten a taste of, well, politics, and I know that bills can be pushed back and sometimes it can be very hard to get things through. For example, the commission, before I even joined it, created an environmental framework that has still not even been seen by our higher-ups, so that's very frustrating to see. I also founded and led my school's environmental science club, and on this club, I've spoken in front of my school board a few times now on behalf of getting solar panels and electric buses in our district and on my school. Sustainability and environmental protection have always been an issue on the back of my mind. From a young age, I have been hyper aware of the environment and taking care of the earth. Growing up and slowly becoming the next generation of people in charge has brought the depth of the climate change problem to the forefront of my mind. Thinking about the destruction that previous generations have caused, no offense, that my generation will have to live with is not only frustrating but scary. I'm 18, and this is the world that I have to grow up in, a world that I don't know will have a bright future. It is frightening to be a youth and feel you have no control over what happens to your planet, your state, or your home. So thank you for allowing me to voice my concerns today. I realized that, I believe it was last year, there was a bill passed that includes a solar for schools program and grants for electric school buses. And like I mentioned earlier, I spoke to my district about getting electric buses in my district. However, in order to get those buses, we applied to the rebates, but we had to advocate for that. Our district didn't know about it. We had to go out of our way to speak at a school meeting and tell them and educate our own school district about it. So while these programs are in place, and I'm very grateful that they are in place, it does give me a lot of hope. There are so many schools and districts that don't know all the possibilities that you guys have started to provide for us. So while I am, again, thankful for these programs, there's still a lot of work to be done.
Senator May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for being here. I think this really hits a point home that a lot of what we do in this legislature is siloed by committee, right? We're the education committee where we talk about what happens in schools, but you've really lifted up an important topic that what's happening in our environment affects what's happening in schools. As the climate warms, as there's less and less snow or winter, there's less outdoor space. There was a huge amount of this summer that everyone had to be inside because of the air quality, not having clean drinking water, not having, you know, the abundance of food that grows at farms. This is all directly impacting your ability to be human beings and be at school and learn. So I want to thank you for bringing that that really intersectional lens to this conversation today and all of the work that you do in our community to make sure that we have a planet to live on. Thank you.
I have a question. You're very passionate about this particular topic.
Yes.
And I applaud you. You know, one of the things I love telling people that we're all here to try to solve as much of the puzzle as possible before we perish, and you're trying really hard to solve one puzzle piece. What do you think happened to you in your life, either parenting or a teacher or maybe just you and your friends? But if every young person, and I'm not talking to the people that showed up to testify today, you people that are here today, the young people are here because you have passion for whatever topic brought you here today. But what could we as educators and legislators do to try to instill in our youth the passion for one thing, one little nugget, before they graduate high school that they can take with them for perhaps years as they try to solve that one issue? Is there some class or assignment or a topic or an experience that so that every child in the state has the passion that you have for whatever's important to them?
Yeah, I mean, just, I guess, environmentally, like, environmental education, just getting outside and, like, being in nature. Like, I grew up and I was not a kid who liked nature. My parents very much forced me into it through all the hikes they took me on, every vacation that was for hiking and for camping. So I think just, I mean, this is, again, just speaking for myself and the environmental topics that I'm talking about today, just getting outside and seeing the beauty that is the earth and Minnesota's natural beauty. Like, the Boundary Waters are gorgeous. I've gone up to Duluth a few times, and it's just amazing every single time. Like, my backyard, just seeing, I saw, like, an albino squirrel the other day. I was like, that's really cool. So it's just being out and about and seeing, like, we have such a gift of, like, the natural beauty that we have, and that, I guess, for me at least, kind of instilled my passion.
Thank you. The simple pleasures of life and yes. Found in an albino squirrel.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Who's here now? Do you want to talk to me? We'll come back up to Bree. They were supposed to speak earlier. Thanks for not giving up on whatever made you late. So thanks for being here.
Hello, my name is Bree Griffin. I am a sophomore at Henry/Camden High School. I would like it to be known that I am not only a daughter, but I am a sister and I am a student as well as an employee. Being a teenager, I realized I have a lot more responsibilities than I saw growing up. All of my siblings and my cousins, they seemed like high school was so much easy and it was just all fun and games. But as I grew up, with COVID and everything, things became hard, especially for me and my family, especially with money. I'm a daughter to a single mother. My father is not in my life. And so money is really hard considering she has 6 kids to take care of. With that being said, being the oldest in the house, I take part of that responsibility, which is why I would like to talk about the phone use in classes. With all this responsibility, with her having to make money at work, she cannot leave, meaning I have to do all of these things as well as being a student. So I could be in class doing a project and I will have to get a phone call. My brother's sick. I have to pick him up and take him home. So most of my teachers are really, you know, understanding, which I am completely grateful for. They're understanding and they're willing to help me any way possible, but not all teachers are. They believe that because I am, I guess, a child, I should be more prioritized on my education. And I really am. I love learning. But at the same time, I have a brother I have to take care of. So what I really want to talk about is the type of people we are hiring. My siblings are special education students, and I am worried for their time as they come up to high school. My high school is very loving to its normal-paced students, but I've noticed my special education workers are not as caring as they're supposed to be. You would think they're supposed to be more caring and more understanding of the students they are taking care of, learning that they need more than what the average student needs, but they don't care as much as they need to, which is why I believe you should focus on who you are hiring, not just funding the people. Otherwise, they'll just come for money. They're not going to care who they're helping. And what's that going to do for us? I do know that hiring alumni from the school is very helpful. My school is full of alumni, you know, kids who've been there or have been in the area and live in the area and know what's going on. My BIs, behavior interventionists, are very helpful, not only getting students to class, but even their out-of-school life. I had a really scary day earlier knowing that my brother was involved in a fight in a middle school, and this happened during a very important test. and I panicked. I didn't know what to do, but my behavior interventionist, Mr. Gerald Woods, he was there to be there for me, and I believe that's the type of people we need. He not only helped me find a way to contact my mom and realize what I need to do, but he helped me with the work afterwards, because my teacher would not allow me to retake it, unfortunately. But he knew how it was growing up in here, and he allowed me to take my time calming down and figuring out my next steps. I am not the only person who has experienced this with behavior interventionists, and I believe they are more needed in this school as alumni, as people in the area, people who look like me. I think that's my main topic, is knowing who you're hiring and not just giving money to people who need it or want it. Having students who are passionate, having employees who are passionate about youth and what they want. I would like to be a mechanical engineer when I grow up, and I wouldn't have known this if it weren't for my staff at my school and the programs we offer. Thank you for allowing me to speak.
Your brother is a lucky guy to have you watching him. Thank you. Senator Duckworth.
You covered it, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Two people want to acknowledge how lucky your brother is. You hear, Rob?
They're not here.
Joel? Virtual? Joel, okay. Whenever you're ready, Joel.
Well, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Joel Wong, and I'm a senior at Hutchinson High School, currently serving as a student representative of Hutchinson Public Schools for about 2 years now. I'm a prospective student at the University of Pennsylvania and also a fellow Boy Stater. Last November, I had the pleasure to attend a youth forum at the state capitol that brought together youth leaders from many organizations across Minnesota. Coming from a small town, I had the opportunity to bring a different perspective at this forum. I was a part of the Educational Equity Committee and discussed the challenges associated with education of high school students. One issue that I would like to highlight from the committee is the tokenization of student representation on school boards. Talking to many students, I realized that my experience as a student rep of a school board is shared. Let me back up a little bit. As a student board representative, my role is to represent students. However, at school board meetings, I only give a list of school events. I was not invited to policy meetings, which I believe a student voice would be imperative to increase student education. I was not given any professional development to be a student representative until this year by the MSBA, and often the role feels as if I'm just there to look pretty in a chair. And that is why my colleague and friend, Mentesnote Sturm, a senior at Open World Learning, and I are working on drafting legislation. While the draft is more specific, I want to give a quick overview of what me and my colleague are working on. We want to do three things. First, mandating two student school board members. Second, giving meaningful voting power to students. And third, having development events for student representatives. In Minnesota, where we pride ourselves in academic excellence, we need to give students a voice on things that directly impact their learning. And we have already reached out to chief and co-authors from the Minnesota House of Representatives and welcome support from the Minnesota Senate. I'm here today not just to ask for support, but also to ask the committee to consider the role of a student, not as a glorified news reporter, but as a leader and a voice on the school board. And I know that Mentesnote Sturm will be speaking later today, so I'll leave the rest off to him. But thank you guys so much for your time.
Senator Duckworth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Joel. Always good to hear from another fellow Boy Stater. As a former school board member, I hear what you're saying, and it's important, the things that you said. Remind me, did you say, are you a senior this year?
I am a senior, yep.
Okay, are you 18 yet?
Yes, I am.
Okay, run for school board. Run for school board. Send us the bill you're working on, and I'd love to see you run. Do it. Bring that voice to the board. If you can't do it as a student now, let's get you on there so you can do it that way. Thanks for testifying.
Thank you so much, Senator Duckworth.
Senator May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I just wanted to let you know, Joel, that there's a constituent in my community who is a senior at Egan High School who is also supporting a bill like this, and he and I have worked on drafting something together. So I'd love to connect the two of you, because I think student voices on school boards are very, very important. So thank you for all of your advocacy.
And I'll echo what those two said, and all the student testifiers. We hope someday you're sitting in these chairs, because you already are advocates for a cause, and someday maybe you can take that sense of civic engagement and political efficacy and civic virtue that made you so confident to come in today and place yourself in these chairs before this stellar body. So, and I'll echo what Senator Duckworth said, run. We need more youth in school boards, so, and legislatures. Thank you. Time, virtual.
Hi, I think you said Clementine, right?
I did. Did I get it wrong?
No, that's right, Clementine. Oh. Thank you so much for having me. My name is Clementine Fry. As you can probably tell, I am not a high school student. But my organization asked me to come today to speak about some of the dangers that are facing LGBT youth. So I just wanted to take a moment. Thank you guys for having me. I work for the Pride Institute. We're one of the oldest LGBT-specific recovery centers in America. We were opened in 1986 as a direct response to the HIV/AIDS pandemic. And today we're facing an entirely new pandemic with the opioid crisis that faces Americans today, not just all Americans, but specifically youths and LGBT youths. There are studies that show that within the last 10 years, suicidality and substance use has increased among all populations, but specifically with LGBT youth, they are 190% more likely to try illicit substances than their heterosexual counterparts. Some of those numbers are even higher for specific populations within the LGBT community. Bisexual youth experience substance use disorder 340% times higher than their heterosexual counterparts. And females who fall under the LGBT umbrella are 400% higher. These are all studies that come from the National Library of Medicine. Some of the ways that we can combat those is to be informed about the compounded risk that goes along with suicidology and substance use disorder, that there are places that you can get help, like the Pride Institute. There's also another LGBT-specific facility in Minnesota called Latitudes. They also offer help. And then another great resource is something called harmreduction.org. A lot of our drugs these days are polysubstance drugs that we aren't aware of. So people are purchasing or using drugs recreationally. They're being laced with sometimes deadly opiates. Ways that can be prevented are by using fentanyl test strips if you do choose to use. Locations where you can receive Narcan and fentanyl test strips can be found on harmreduction.org. All of these sites have also been vetted to make sure that they are either free or easily accessible to those of you who are low income. That's kind of my spiel for today. I wanted to thank you again. Really appreciate it. It's very galvanizing and heartening to see so many well-spoken, intelligent, well-informed youths. It makes me really excited for what's coming tomorrow.
And we thank you. I know there's some privacy issues between having some students from your place testifying today, but we believe it's an important voice to be heard as well. And so thanks for testifying.
Of course, thank you so much.
Yaskar?
My name is Haley Asgar. I'm a seventh grader at Sartell Middle School. The first time I spoke out against what was happening in my school district was during the summer of 2021. The previous school year, I was in fourth grade and was participating in distance learning. It was during this time that I was asked to complete an equity survey. My teacher said I was not allowed to skip any questions, even if I didn't understand them. One question asked what gender we identify with. I was very confused, along with a lot of my other classmates. A boy in my class asked the teacher if his mom could explain the question to him, because even after my teacher explained it, he still didn't understand. My teacher said he was not allowed to ask his mom, and we could not repeat any of the questions to our parents. This made me feel very uncomfortable and nervous. My mom always tells me that I can tell her anything, so being asked to hide this from my mom made me feel very uneasy, like I was doing something wrong. I am lucky to have a mom, family members, and community members willing to stand up and fight for me and the other kids I go to school with, but they shouldn't have to keep fighting so hard. When I go to school every day, I want to learn about the important things that are going to help me reach my dream of becoming an orthodontist. Instead, what I've noticed in my classes, especially in my English class, is that everything is political. Depending on what side of the political spectrum you fall on as a student, you get a very different experience. In general, my school's experience is a political one, more than it is an educational one. I don't care what political side my teacher is on, nor should I be able to tell you, which is why I stand before you today asking you to stop pushing politics in our schools and put your focus back on students and our education. Thank you.
Wait, we might have questions for you. I don't know. Senator Wiesenberg.
I just want to say thank you for coming down and speaking. It takes a lot of guts to get up and tell your story, so thank you.
You and does she have the longest drive winning award? Sartell, it's up by St. Cloud, right?
Senator Switzinski.
Oh, yeah, an alumni of the school district.
Actually, I did grow up in Sartell. I grew up right on First Avenue North, where the old water tower used to be behind St. Francis Xavier there. I did not go to the middle school. Well, we did. We did part-time because I went to the little Catholic school, and so we'd go there to the high school for half of the day and then go back to the little Catholic school and finish out our day. But I do have a question for you, if that's okay.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming back, Haley. So the equity survey that you took, was that a district-wide survey? And are you saying you took that in middle school or elementary school?
We took it in intermediate school when I was in fourth grade.
In fourth grade. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And can you maybe talk to us a little bit about some of the topics or the issues that when you say your English class is political or classes are political, can you give us some examples of what that would look like?
Well, I could tell, which I shouldn't be able to, but I could tell that my teachers, I can tell what political side they are on by some of the things they mention in class and some of the things they say to us.
Okay, thank you.
What, Senator Abler? Sorry.
I really appreciate you coming up. That was very brave of you and good for you. We should not be hiding things from our parents. Parents are a part of the team, and it even says in the law that parents are primarily responsible for the education of their children. And there seems to be I'm not going very far into this, Mr. Chair. This is a very controversial topic, and given that, it's even braver that you're here if you know the kind of conversations that we're having. But at the end of the day, the parents get to raise their kids. Parents are the people who choose where they live, and parents are the support at home. And when we have good parents supporting our kids of all ages, they do better in school, they become better, they become good citizens. There's challenges when some of the, I'm just careful where I'm sliding toward here, but it's fortunate you have parents that are so supportive. Thank you.
Now I think you're done. Thank you. Sturm? Is it?
Mendes, not Sturm. There he goes.
Okay. Thank you.
Does this work? Okay, awesome. Hi. Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Mintessa Note Sturm. I am a senior at Open World Learning Community. It is a very, very small school on the west side of St. Paul. So you already heard from Joel Wong. He and I have been working together on the bill to restructure and expand the powers that student school board representatives have. I just want to speak a little bit on my own experience within my school. I've never been a student school board representative, but I have had a lot of influence in shaping the curriculum within my school in certain areas and having some influence there. So at the end of my 10th grade year, I was invited to sit in on an interview committee for hiring a new teacher. And that was a really pivotal experience for me to be able to feel that I have power within my school and to be able to shape my education and be able to say, hey, this person is going to be teaching me. I want to have some say in who it is, right? And then the next year, my school is very small, I've already said that. So we have some limitations with which classes are available. And I've loved art and drawing for the longest time. I think my first drawing was a car when I was 4 years old. It was a very bad car. My art is a lot better now. But I noticed that there was nothing else beyond just like our studio art courses, right? And I said, hey, I want an advanced placement course for this class. I think that that's important for artistic students to be able to challenge themselves in this kind of setting. And I also noticed that a lot of times kids who do love art are a little less engaged academically. And so I decided to push for the inclusion of an AP art class in our school, and I was successful. So now getting to my actual point, I think that when students are encouraged to be like engaged in the powerful bits of their education, they feel more connected to what they're learning. And that's been my experience. And I think that that is important to include students in all forms of decision making that pertain to their educational experience. And that is why Joel and I are advocating for some changes in the powers given to student school board representatives.
I think that's a great idea that they asked you to be on the hiring committee. That's something I don't think I've ever heard before, that a school district would let students be part of the hiring committee to teach them.
Yeah, my school.
I think that voice is, I applaud your school district for doing that.
Yeah. I've been pretty lucky to have the experience that I do, and I know that not a lot of people have that same experience, and I want to expand that for all students in Minnesota. I don't think that I should just be one of the lucky ones.
Senator Kunesh.
Thank you so much for coming in, and thanks for participating in that kind of empowerment for students. Your idea is what you're doing is sitting on a hiring board and having that voice, and as you said, to educate. How do you feel about also being able to perhaps be part of the review process for your teachers and your administrators going forward?
I think that that is an important opportunity. I think maybe I wasn't super clear. That was just an example of like the things that I've been able to do, and I wanted to. That was kind of like a segue into the school board policy bit. But I think I do believe that it is important for students to be able to say, "Hey, this is what we would like from our teachers, from our education," and be able to have that influence.
Thank you.
Who's now? Luca. And I do believe Luca is last, unless somebody's here that was hoping to speak, a student hoping to speak. Okay. Thank you, Luca.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair, and members of the committee for having me here today. I should start. My name is Luca Jacoby Crone. I'm a senior at Edina High School, and I'm part of the MYC, so the Minnesota Youth Council. I'm an at-large representative and co-chair of the Juvenile Justice Committee on the MYC. The Minnesota Youth Council is a 36-member council of young people representing the 8 congressional districts in Minnesota. We are empowered with the crucial task of amplifying the voices of youth across Minnesota. We approach our duties with full commitment and sincerity. So the MYC is unique in the sense that, according to Minnesota Statute 124D.957, it serves as a sort of liaison for youth to the legislature. The MYC has always and continues to strive to be just that, a way to amplify the voices of youth and the issues they are facing, and to bring these to the attention of the legislature, and to work on solutions to solve these issues. Getting youth involved in the process is vital. When solutions are made for youth without their input, the solutions can be ineffective and truly miss the heart of the problem. From providing testimony to meeting with representatives about proposed legislation, the MYC continues to provide youth input in legislation. From helping design the student engagement and decision-making survey to pushing for the removal of solitary confinement for youth, the MYC has been involved in many issues. Each youth representative goes into their own district and talks with fellow young people to hear issues concerning them, and they bring that to the attention to one of our 4 committees in the MYC. Each committee is dedicated to being a positive force of change and helping improve the lives of youth across Minnesota and their communities. The council has allowed me to bring up issues regarding concerns about student safety in schools, as well as backdoor sentencing for youth in Minnesota, all of which the MYC has advocated many solutions for. Youth are the very backbone of Minnesota and are often overlooked. Helping youth also helps Minnesota. The MYC allows youth to be included in discussions and allows them to have a seat at the table. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Members, while all the witnesses or testifiers today are witnesses, I guess you are witnesses to education. Thank you for coming today. Did you drive the farthest then? You said Sartell drove farther? Not that we have a prize or anything, but thank you for those of you that did come from farther away than the metro area. Senator Abler, do you want to?
Well, I just kind of wanted to pick up where you were going. And then you can...
Wait, no, I have things to say. But
no, but I just wanted to, I'm agreeing with you. Is that okay? It was really impressive. I know when I was growing up, my dad thought the world was going to end with my generation. But there's a lot of really amazing talent and, you know, connectedness. And I think this was a really great day, Mr. Chair. And I think that all the testifiers should be really happy to be, you know, so persuasive and so... and presented so well today. So that's all.
Thank you, Senator. Anybody else? Senator Mann?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to echo that. I have a few degrees, and I was president of the NHS too, and I've never in my life felt so inadequate and such an underachiever as I have in this moment. No kidding. I mean, every person who spoke was so incredibly intelligent in their topic and passionate. And I'm blown away, and I have so much hope for the future, and I'm so excited, and I just want to thank you so much for being here today and speaking and sharing your voices.
Senator May Quaid.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll echo my colleagues' points or say ditto so I don't have to repeat them. One thing that today has really reminded me of is I remember when I was in high school, and someone said to me something like, well, you know, your generation will handle it. You know, the youth will handle it. And I said, well, we don't want to do it alone. We just want to share some power. And that has always stuck with me because today it reminds me that we don't have to pass off solutions to young people, but we should share power with them to find them and make them happen. And you all coming and sharing so beautifully the issues and your stories and answering questions. I'm just, I'm really, really dedicated to sharing that power to find solutions together. And I want to thank you for coming here to remind us all that we can do that. So thank you.
Okay. When Senator Kunesh and I first became chairs of Education Policy and Finance, one of the first insights we had was the number of students that had testified in our previous time here in the Minnesota Senate. And it just struck me as strange that we just didn't invite the 850,000 students in Minnesota to come testify as frequently as we should. So both of us decided we would dedicate one hearing for just to hear from student voices. And today was that day. And I just want to echo what everybody just said. The future is in great hands. And thank you for all of you that want to leave this world a better place than you found it, because that's why we're all here. And so whatever role you play in that, you certainly exemplified that today with your visit here with us. Members, I just want to thank you. I know this isn't in the traditional trajectory of how a bill becomes a law 101, how we sit and banter and debate and discuss and deliberate over matters of state, but I think it's an important day to hear the student voices. So, but we will continue on Wednesday with the traditional deliberation and debate, and over on Wednesday we're hearing the governor's policy bill, Senate file 3567, and so that's what the agenda is on Wednesday, and I'll see everybody on Wednesday. Thanks for coming.